Hi, this is John Moore, and welcome to my Who Knew podcast. And our guest today is Advait Guge. Welcome to the microphone.
Thank you so much, John. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad that you're here. Purpose of this podcast is to talk to people, just everyday average folks who otherwise wouldn't get an audience, and talk about what they do in their lives. There was a similar project done by National Public Radio a number of years ago. It's where I got the idea from it. And they set up at the State Fair of Texas, I believe it was. They just had a trailer set up on the Midway. And they would just pull people in and interview them. And I thought it was one of the most fascinating things I'd ever heard. So I thought, I'm not actually stealing it. I'm just borrowing the idea. So you are an actor.
Yes, sir, I am.
Tell us about yourself. How old are you? Where are you from?
So I'm 27 years old, originally from India. But we moved to the U.S., my family and I, when I was very small. And we've been living in Texas now for the majority of about maybe 15, 16 years. And yeah, acting is by far my life's passion and what I'm throwing everything at.
Okay, so how old were you when you moved to the States?
Just shy of 3.
Do you remember India at all?
Not from then. I'm told I was fluent in the language at the time. Mm-hmm. We kind of tossed that out the window just to pick up English as quickly as possible. But we've been back numerous times, so I've gotten ample memories.
All right. So we'll talk a little bit about the film industry in India, because that's a whole nother very interesting...
Oh, that's its own beast.
Very interesting topic. At what point did you decide you wanted to be an actor? Was there an aha moment, or was it gradual?
No, there was actually an aha moment. So I'd already finished university. I'd got my degree in bio, of all things, and I had just turned down the med school route and the research route. And I was living here with the family, working, saving up, trying to figure out what my next step would be. And I was asked to do a men's fashion boutique catalog. And I had a lot of fun doing it. Thought out, you know, if people ask me to do something like that, maybe I can find a way to make myself get paid. Turns out male modeling doesn't pay that much. So I started looking for things that were close to that skill set because I figured I'd enjoy it. And acting cropped up. And I'd never considered acting before as anything. Definitely hadn't done theater growing up in high school or middle school. But I found this phenomenal acting coach very nearby in Dallas, so only about an hour and a half away. And I started going to see her, and then I just couldn't stop going to see her. Once I did, she kind of restructured my entire concept of what actors are and what they do. And I did my first performance 6 weeks in, using the skill sets I'd been learning for those 6 weeks. And it was like the entire world just stopped for me. All the voices in my head just went quiet. Everything was in the present. And I was living through somebody else. And when I came out of it, my entire body was vibrating in the most serene kind of way. And it was my aha moment. This is what passion feels like, and I can't possibly walk away from it.
Is that the typical experience for most actors, is they have an aha moment?
I have no idea.
You haven't talked to that
many? I've talked to plenty of actors, and I always get different responses. Some of them say that it's just something they like to do, and they're not trying to make their entire life about it. And then there's some who say that this is all they've ever done. You know, they've been doing this since they were little. They went to some sort of acting school instead of a college. And then there's some that are just kind of, they love it the same way. There are some who love it the same way. And sometimes it's because they saw a movie and they realized, I should be doing that. That should be me up there. And that's actually one of the things that happened to me. Was before I ever did the actual first performance, I saw a movie and I thought, why am I not doing that? That should be me on there.
You remember what the movie was?
Yeah, it was Thor.
Oh, okay.
Of all things, yeah. For some reason, because Thor's character was one that just resonated with me so much, and it was kind of like this uber masculine man child that I could clearly identify with, flaws and all. seeing that character on screen portrayed so well by Chris Hemsworth, who, in my opinion, did a phenomenal job with the character, I couldn't help but think for a moment, why am I not doing that? That needs to be me on that screen.
Our guest on the podcast today is Advait Gugge, who is an actor, 27 years old, and he is telling us his story, which is of becoming an actor. So at 27, you haven't been an actor for that long. Talk about some of your struggles. What's been the tough part of being, trying to be an actor? I know there's a lot of people that try, and there's only a handful of Leonardo DiCaprio's. And
I think my greatest struggle has always with this has been feeling as if I'm playing catch up to great actors who have been doing this since they were children. People who've been honing skills in this field, building networks, understanding, working, training since they were kids, and coming out of a background that is entirely polarized into a different state of mind, an academic state of mind, you kind of carry some of those tendencies and bad habits in terms of trying to overthink, overanalyze. And with acting, one thing that I learned that is a constant work in progress is that it's not about being in control. And that is a very difficult thing for me personally. My coach has been monumental in shifting that paradigm for me, but it was one that required a conscious choice to say, it's going to be okay if I'm not in control and I need to let go.
You're saying other people's words. Somebody else has written what you're saying. You're interpreting how to deliver those words. That, to me, is the essence of acting. So at what point do you think a person says, that's for me? Because if you think about the premise, that's a little bit different, really.
Yeah, it kind of requires a sort of functional madness. It is because we want to feel a sense of control in our environment. And outside of the acting paradigm, I'll still do that all the time. But you kind of recognize that control is the illusion. And I think when some people stumble across that thought, that sentiment, that truth, they have a choice to make, and that is whether or not they prefer the idea of not being in control and seeing what happens, or whether or not they prefer control, or at least the semblance of it. And as an actor, I think the critical moment in, you know, going from crawling to stumbling around before walking is being able to accept that you're not in control. And so what I study is primarily method style acting. So it's...
Explain what that is. I mean, I've heard that my entire life. Brando and James Dean, Lee Strasberg.
Yeah, it's definitely got quite a retinue of famous actors to propone it. But it's... So method acting was kind of championed and developed by Stanislavski, who's this guy who essentially wrote the Bible of actors. And what he said was that the act of acting needs to be less about trying to figure out what to do as your character, as this whatever your role is, and more about actually being that thing, letting it organically unfold in the situation that it's put in. And that requires kind of these tricks and practices and the mental exercise of stepping out of yourself, reducing yourself to your basic state, then stepping out of that into someone else. And so that's why it's a method. It's this idea of there's a pathway, one of many that you can take, whatever works for you at the time, to get from who you are to a sort of genuine someone else. So whenever you are acting and reacting to things, it is that. It's mostly reacting and react, and it becomes that much more authentic to you. Now, some people are able to do this better than others, and you know, to varying levels of success on screen. It's kind of merged with camera technique and the technical skills that come with actors on film as well. But it's for me, as somebody who kind of isn't always my own best friend, being able to step out of me into someone else is cathartic.
So I noticed this all my life about certain actors. It's like Tom Cruise always seems to be Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Regardless of what film he's in. Harrison Ford, Tommy Lee Jones, Morgan Freeman, Samuel L. Jackson. I'm just going down the list of people that come to mind. The one that doesn't seem to always play themselves would be Meryl Streep. She is quite different. Yeah. So define that. What is that when an actor is kind of the same person in every film they're in, and then somebody is a chameleon like De Niro?
So that's the difference between typecasting and character acting.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have, fundamentally, you can have all these different characters in your back pocket. But when you kind of have one character that, say, Hollywood prefers to see you as, and you've got no objection to constantly playing that same character type again and again and again, then that's typecasting. So that's where you see the same person in the same character type again and again and again. Then when you have characters or actors who are changing between characters all the time, different people, vastly different people sometimes, that's what we call character acting. These are character actors. They don't act as themselves, in quotes. They act as different people.
I guess my question is that a conscious choice that the actor makes, or is it something where they go, that worked in the last picture, so we want you to do this every time, and here's $15 million.
It's probably a bit of both.
Okay.
Like, for example, if you look at Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey, for the longest time, was slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
He was that guy who did crazy things with his face and behaved well outside the norms of what anyone would consider normal human behavior, and that was his character every mm-hmm. time. Ace Ventura is kind of a great example of that. But then he goes and makes Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. And he did that against the advice of his production houses. Not a lot of people had faith in the idea that he could play a dramatic, heavy role like that. But he proved them wrong. He broke his typecast, is what we call it.
Mm.
And after doing so successfully, he could then go on and choose to do any other kind of character he wanted, because he'd proven that he could successfully in the box office. So it does come down to a bit of both. There have been times when actors, I think it was a famous, I think it was James Dean. He'd wanted to do this kind of dramatic role before, but he'd been typecast as kind of the Hollywood heartthrob, bad boy type. And so he had, I could be wrong in this, but it was definitely a character of that era and of that typecast. And he said that he had wanted to do this role, and the production house bought the rights to the film just so they could shut it down so he couldn't play that character.
They weren't playing around.
No, they weren't. They were very, very serious. Yeah.
Our guest on the podcast today on Who Knew is Advait Gugge, who is an actor, 27. And do you live in the Dallas area?
Yeah, I'm living in Dallas now.
What's acting like in Dallas? Is it a hot spot for actors, or is it not so much?
It's actually one of the... So there are three major hubs for acting in the U.S., L.A. being the obvious original choice. And this is primarily for film acting. Theater acting, you're going to find that mostly, like Broadway, et cetera, in New York. But for film, there are three hubs. There's L.A., Atlanta, Georgia, and Dallas, Texas.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, Atlanta, Georgia has a lot of film work going on.
Why is that?
I'm not quite certain how it started, but I know there's a lot of, it's cheaper for people to...
It's always about the money, isn't it?
It is. I mean,
you hear
a lot of
Canada. You hear a lot of filming in Canada.
There's a lot of... And New Zealand is kind of a big go-to as well, because they have every form of geography known to man in one small space.
Gorgeous in New Zealand.
And extremely cheap for production houses.
Hmm.
There are a lot of pro film industry benefits for filming movies there.
So talk about the acting that you've done so far. We talked about your struggles. Talk about your home runs.
So I actually got off to kind of a very blessed start when it comes to acting. I was living here in East Texas, and I was driving to Dallas a couple times a week to do modeling gigs, to do acting classes. I started doing acting lessons or taking acting lessons in 2015, mm-hmm. sometime in spring, early summer. And around fall, I asked my coach, should I be doing auditions yet? Am I ready? And she said, yeah, go for it. But understand that most of the time you will go in for 10 auditions and maybe get a call back once. And so don't get overly attached to the idea of, do they like me? Do they not like me? Will I get it? Won't I get it? Just go in, do your audition, and then leave. Don't think about it again. Just get ready for the next one. So she did a phenomenal job of equipping me with that mentality beforehand. But I went in and I started doing auditions, expecting that that would be the same result that I would experience. But in fact, it turned out to be quite the opposite. In a way, it was kind of my evidence, my sign that this was the right path. Because instead of going in for 10 auditions and getting one, I went in for 10 auditions and I got 13 roles. So I went in and I started just booking everything that I went up for. And these were all lead roles in short films. And then people got in contact with me to start asking if I wanted to audition for these roles again. So I ended up getting a few extra from that as well. And it just kind of snowballed. So by about 6 months into actually doing acting, I'd booked something like 13, 14 roles. And it was a bizarre happenstance, which is probably pivotal in convincing both myself and my family that this was a thing, this was real, at least for me. And so I can't say that I struggled too much in those early days of just getting experience. And then came the idea, okay, well, then I need to get representation. We need to see where, you know, what the next step is. And in Dallas, it's primarily a starting point for a lot of actors. There have been a lot of actors who have become quite a large success who started in Dallas. That's where they came from. So Selena Gomez, I always forget this one's name. He was all right.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. He's from here, East Texas.
Yeah, he's from Longview.
Yeah. There have been quite a few phenomenal actors that have come out of this area, and you can get a lot of practice because it's a commercial industry, and there's a film school, so there's a lot of small productions being made that are casting locally.
Let's talk about commercials, because that's one of the enjoyable things for people to see an old commercial of either Steve Carell or Jason Alexander, and they're hawking donuts or McDonald's, and obviously quite young, but I'm guessing it paid the rent.
It does, yeah. That was one of the things my acting coach made sure that all of her students were capable of, was commercial acting. The big part of that being because as an actor, you want to be going out and honing your skills constantly. You also need to be making enough money to pay your bills.
Yeah,
to,
so they don't turn your electricity
off. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you could go the route of taking a menial job, and there are many, many actors who do that. You'll be one of 100,000 who are doing that. And the cycle that all of them go through is they start in some service industry job because they can quickly ditch it, get someone to cover, and go to an audition. But they also end up with very high turnover rate in jobs because of that. They get fired because people get tired of dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're constantly working, or you're overworking to make peanuts, to lose the job, to start over.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make sure that there was some other way. There had to have been a more practical way for me, at least. And I'd done a desk job before, and I knew I couldn't stomach it.
Not your thing.
No, not at all. It's soul-crushing to me. It makes me completely functionally mute. So I knew I needed to develop my creative skills in a way that would be supporting me in an ancillary capacity to actually acting in film.
So how long does that happen? I mean, how long do you have to pay your dues, as it were? I guess it's different for everybody.
Oh, it's completely unpredictable. That's the bizarre thing is this industry has no predictable schedule for success. There's no work this long and you climb the ladder. There's no work this long and you get a bonus. There's no promotion. There's nothing that you're working towards like that. You're just going audition by audition. And you don't know when you're going to be seen by somebody who matters and makes your career launch. So you're quite honestly just, the more you think about attempting to raise in station as an actor, the more you're actually kind of pulling yourself away from the core of what is making you a good actor, which is the experience of the journey. That experience is what deepens your soul and what expands your range and what allows you to really immerse into a character and produce work that you can be proud of. When you start focusing on the goal, then you start to kind of, at least in my experience for me, it starts to pull me away from that ability. You start to stress. You start to put pressure on yourself. And one thing that, it wasn't Robert De Niro, it was Al Pacino. He said he was doing this...
Who you look like a little bit.
Oh, thank you. That's...
No, a young Al Pacino, not the current Al Pacino.
Hey, the man's got a phenomenal head of hair right now. So
he does.
No, Scarface is legendary.
Mm.
There was a time right after The Godfather where he was doing some theater work, and he'd done several performances for this one play, and one of his best buddies who acted with him and was his best friend in or off screen in The Godfather, a man that he claims to respect as an actor very highly, had come to see his performance. And he got so wrapped up in the idea that I have to impress this man with my performance that he said it was the worst performance he ever did in theater. And that is kind of that's the truism of it. It's this idea that if you're focused on your effect, you're trying to control. You're taking yourself away from the experience in the moment. Yeah, it's a bizarre quandary.
Our guest on the podcast today, who knew, is Advait Gugge, who is an actor, lives in the Dallas area. Why do actors seem to, not all of them, but let's take Kevin Spacey, for example, or Louis C.K., why do they self-destruct like that?
Whew, that's a tough one. It could be any number of reasons, I think. There's a lot to be said for the help of having people who ground you when you're a very big success, I think, in any industry. I think with great success comes the potential for great pride and hubris and forgetting that you're just another person. Along with everyone else. And this is, you see this in not just actors and models and musicians and singers, but also in politicians and big industry leaders and companies of tech and economics. People who acquire fame also suffer from acquiring inflated ego. It kind of comes with it, and it's a struggle not to buy into your own hype. And that is something, actually, my coach mentioned this once before. She said, the day will come when you're successful in this, and your greatest struggle will be, do not buy into your own hype.
Don't believe your own hype. That's good advice for anybody, I think.
Yeah.
Talk about some of your projects. What can we see you in?
Yeah, so if you guys have ever seen any of the Choctaw Casino ads, you'll see a few of them running that have been running for a couple of years now, where I'm in those. Finished filming one for Humera, did some Verizon work a year ago, and I'm just about to shoot one for Amazon this month. So that'll come out as well. That'll be on screen. And then also, let's see, all my film work, there's some stuff going around in film festivals right now. One of them called Arcadia is my newest and most proud piece to date. Had the opportunity to work with some phenomenal talent and crew and directing. It was and it turned into quite an epic film.
You also do voice acting, which is I would think, and I've done some of that myself when I was in the radio business. when you do your own skits and things like that. But voice acting allows you to completely focus on how you sound and not worry about what you can wear a ball cap and do it.
I mean, yeah.
So talk about voice acting and how it's different from
voice acting. I love voice acting. I've been doing voices since I was a toddler. I was a parrot growing up. If I heard an accent, I'd do it. If I heard a voice, I'd do it. And excuse me, everyone, for right now, I'm a little bit under the weather with a cold, but it's this kind of an opportunity to be functionally schizophrenic in my closet, and it's very engaging in a way that is also somewhat relaxing. Just because you're right, you don't have to do all the physical appearance aspect of acting. But at the same time, you are immersing into a character. It doesn't change. All of that is still the same. I'm still there wildly gesticulating in the dark while I'm being this character, kind of immersing into the scene that I'm reading out loud or voicing over. So in that respect, it's a very specialized but quite collected skill set from acting. It's definitely part of acting, and it's a lot of fun to do.
What's the biggest misconception about acting? Is it that everybody that does it is successful, or what is it?
I think probably the biggest misconception about acting is that it's about the words.
So it's not about the words.
No, in fact, the words are your least important tool to work with. Just think about how we communicate as human beings. Psychology and anthropology will tell you that language is only 5% the words you use. 95% of communication is everything else. It's intonation, it's body language, it's facial expression, it's little things that we can't always pinpoint. And so when you approach acting with the idea that the words is what acting is about, you dilute your communication on screen to the 5% of communication that words occupy. And this is one of the biggest differences, I think, between method acting and what was being done before, which is that by inhabiting a character as opposed to trying to decide what to do with your presence on camera in a controlled way, you're allowing your subconscious to dictate all the little things that we can't measure that make up the other 95% of communication. And that, I think, is why we seem to gravitate towards actors who do method very well. Daniel Day-Lewis is a great example of this. Here's a man who's won multiple Academy Awards, is a staunch supporter of method, and will take it with him as far as he has to go to feel like he's performing the way he needs to. And a lot of his movies, he doesn't say very much. His characters are not overly verbose. It's that they have such presence, it's that they have so much communication in non-verbal ways that you feel that presence. It's real to you. And so that, I think, is probably the biggest misconception that I know I walked in with and that most of the other people I walked into class with started with.
Who's your favorite actor?
Ooh. Dude, that's a tough one. I think Robert Downey Jr. does a phenomenal job. I think Robert Downey Jr., Daniel Day-Lewis, and especially some of the early work by Johnny Depp are some of my favorite on-screen performances.
So you're not a big fan of Pirates of the Caribbean 13?
Or 15, or yeah. 25, or...
Which I just read he's not going to be in the next Pirates of the Caribbean. So they said it's going to save him Disney $90 million.
Wow. Yeah, I believe it. I mean,
How does somebody get paid $90 million and have a money problem? I'm chasing rabbits here.
The
Johnny Depp question.
He did buy an island.
Yeah, he did. Marlon Brando did that, too.
Yeah, I think the property taxes will take its toll.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So who are some of the actors that you've worked with, well-known or just favorite people?
Let's see. I don't think I've worked with anyone right now who would be considered very well-known. Definitely not an A or B lister, but that is definitely my... ambition is to be on screen with Academy Award winners.
Name some. Who would you like to work with?
Oh, I would love to work with Daniel Day-Lewis, Robert Downey Jr. I would definitely love to work with Leonardo DiCaprio at some point. I think he has a tremendous capacity for versatility in his characters. I've watched his work since he was very young, and he's always given 110%. I think in terms of female characters, if I ever got to work, I would love to work with Meryl Streep for sure. That is a woman. I saw her in quite a few things growing up, but I never thought about it until I saw her. And believe it or not, it was Devil Wears Prada.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I was sitting there watching with my little sister, and I thought, this woman is so badass. Mm-hmm. I mean, the character she plays is powerful, egocentric, and definitely jaded, but you feel it in such a way that you can't help but care for by the end of the film. I think a capacity of an actor to make any character who plays an antagonist into something that the audience sympathizes with is a hallmark of a great actor.
Our guest on the podcast today is Advait Gugay, who is an actor from the Dallas area, lives in the Dallas area, but I guess Have Script Will Travel, you'll go wherever the work is, right?
Yeah. I would be so happy to just travel the world doing these roles. It doesn't matter where, honestly.
What advice would you give to someone who did what you did and just put aside the typical career choice and go for the acting ring?
I think there are two things I would say, because they're things I would tell myself at that same juncture. One, learn to live, experience life and all the emotional ups and downs, the experiential ups and downs. Don't be afraid to try new things, because these are the things that are going to deepen your soul and give you more range to draw from. And two, approach this with as much practical intelligence as you can, but understand you are not in control. I think those are the two things I'd say.
Those are both good pieces of advice, no matter what you're going to
do. I think so, yeah. I kind of live with only three rules in life.
Yeah.
The first one is don't argue with stupid.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is, I don't know, I probably can't say this in its original verbiage, but don't get involved with crazy romantically. And the third one is, and that's despite the little graph from How I Met Your Mother, throw that out the window. And the last one is, don't tell the wave which way to go, just ride it. I think that last one has been the single greatest life changer for me, is this idea of, you may know what you want in life, but don't assume there's only one way to it. And don't assume that your goal will always stay the same. Allow your experience and immersion in life to affect you.
So we'll be looking for your Choctaw Casino ads, and your Amazon ad, you said, is coming out pretty soon.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
All right. Advait Gugay, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.